Yeah, so it's mostly a classical result, but it ties into quantum computing in some ways that I'll show you. So I'm mostly going to like proceed through each part of the title and explain to you what it means, and then eventually I'll get onto the results and tell you about some quantum stuff. Okay, so most of you are probably fairly familiar with post-selection. In a quantum setting, like you tend to have these kind of post-selection protocols that you use in the lab where you want to prepare some system, so you do like you'll prepare some bigger system, you'll measure half of it, and then conditioned on measuring some certain like subset of states, you know that the other half of the system is in the state that you want, right? So we have this kind of weaker form of post-selection that people use in quantum information. But what I'm going to talk about is like a much more general version of post-selection, right? So I'm going to define it to be the hypothetical ability to just choose the outcome of some random event. So suppose you're given like some playing card, you don't know what it is. You might just guess that it's like the six of diamonds or the ace of spades, and then you just post-select on the event that you're right. Okay, and assuming you actually do have this ability to post-select, you'll find that when you turn over the card, you see like the six of diamonds or the ace of spades. Right, so if you did it again, you see the ace of spades, and if you did it again, maybe like the six of diamonds. Right, so the intuition here is like using post-selection, you're taking advantage of correlations between events. So obviously, the event of seeing the six of diamonds or the ace of spades is like really strongly correlated with the event of being right. Okay, so if you post-select on the event that you're right, then you'll see either the event that you get six of diamonds or the ace of spades. In a more computational sense, we can kind of define it to be like the ability to discard computational paths where some event that you don't want to happen doesn't happen. Right, so as an example, like suppose you're given some like three-sat formula. So you want to know like these are Boolean variables. So you want to know is there any assignment of values to these variables that will make this Boolean formula evaluate to true, to one. So a kind of naive approach is to like choose some value of x0 at random by flipping a coin, then do the same for x1, and then the same for x2. And then like you'll kind of put these values into the formula and see whether it evaluates to true or not. Okay, so some of them will, like the ones I've put a green tick under, and some of them won't. But if you post-select on the event that the assignment that you've randomly chosen does happen to like satisfy this Boolean formula, then you'll find that every kind of coin toss you do leads you down one of these computational paths that ends in like a succeeding kind of event that you have satisfied this formula. Okay, so this is just like a toy example to show that if you have the ability to post-select, then by just flipping some coins at random, you can find a satisfying assignment to this three-sat formula, which is actually like an NP-hard problem, right? So having post-selection makes some really hard problem kind of computationally trivial, assuming you have this post-selection ability. All right, so the question is like, what other problems become easy? So it might seem like post-selection is super powerful, but in fact, like it doesn't make every problem easy. And also, like, what happens if we have a quantum computer with post-selection? Okay, if we have this intuition that we're kind of taking advantage of correlations between events, we might expect that given we can get kind of stronger correlations in quantum information, that if we have a quantum computer with post-selection, we'll be able to do a bit more than a classical computer. All right, so I'll define the class post-BPP, which was defined like a while back, kind of under a different setting. So we can say, okay, given two randomized polynomial time algorithms, A and B, if the input X is a yes instance, so we say if it's in like the language L, we just want the probability that A outputs one, given that B outputs one, to be bigger than two-thirds. And if X is like a no instance, we want the probability that A returns one, given that B returns one, to be less than a third. Okay, and then finally, we just want the probability that B does actually return one to be just bigger than zero. Okay, it can be really tiny, but it just needs to be bigger than zero. So the intuition here is like the algorithm B is like the post-selector. Okay, so it tells us whether to trust the output of A. Intuitively, we're kind of post-selecting on B outputting one. Okay, so that's like the formal definition. And then we can define like the quantum version of this like in a similar way. So we can define post-BQP. by just taking these two quantum algorithms A and B, these two classical algorithms A and B, and making them quantum. Right? Okay, so we have these two classes, and we might want to find out what the difference is between them in terms of computational power. So just to give some more motivation, that's maybe not just kind of computational. Firstly, I should point out that we only really know how to prove like rigorous polynomial separations between quantum and classical computation. So if we can prove an exponential separation, it's either just it's either for a partial function, so a function where you don't care about getting the right answer on every input in your domain. Or these exponential separations, like for Shor's factoring algorithm, are just conjectured, right? We can't actually prove that it's faster, we just think it is. But when we have post-selection, we can actually prove like big separations. So in some sense, like post-selection really exaggerates the difference between quantum and classical computing. And I'll come back to this like later on in the talk.
When you say we can prove polynomial separations, you mean for query complexity?
Yeah, I mean for query complexity, yeah. So I'll get onto that as well, yeah. And then finally, like a more physical motivation, there's this kind of research direction where we look at like extending quantum mechanics in some way, say adding post-selection, and then we look at its computational power, right, as some kind of guide to see whether this is like a reasonable extension to quantum mechanics. So there's kind of two kind of simple examples here. Like we might change quantum mechanics to have like non-unitary evolution, right? It's still linear, but non-unitary. And if we do this, it turns out we can actually simulate post-selection. And likewise, we might change the measurement probability of given some amplitude alpha from like the 2 norm of alpha, like the square of alpha, to like taking the p norm, say, the pth power of alpha. And if we do this, so long as p doesn't equal 2, again, we can simulate post-selection. So intuitively, we might say, oh, like having the ability to post-select is kind of unreasonable. It gives us all this computational power. And therefore, like maybe this is a reason why quantum mechanics is not obviously using non-unitary evolution, say. So kind of studying things like post-selection is just a nice way to kind of get a feeling for why quantum mechanics might be the way it is. Okay, so I'll motivate the more computer science side of stuff by just talking about the relationship between quantum and classical computing given post-selection. So the relationship between these two classes, post-BPP and post-BQP. Okay, so I'm gonna draw some arrows and that just means like one class is contained in the other class. Right, so obviously, classical computing with post-selection is contained in quantum computing with post-selection. And kind of by this three-thread example that I showed you earlier, like NP is obviously contained in post-BPP. The only other thing we really know about post-BPP is it's contained in the third level of what we call the polynomial hierarchy. Do you guys want me to explain what the polynomial hierarchy is? So anyone doesn't know? Okay. So we can kind of see it as like an extension. Is there any chalk? We can see it as like an extension of NP. So for NP, we can state any problem as, does there exist some input x such that f of x equals 1 for some function that we care about, right? And likewise, we can define co-NP, which is like the, so NP is a set of computational problems where we can verify like a yes instance in polynomial time. Co-NP is a set of problems where we can verify a no instance in polynomial time. So you can write this as like for all x, does f of x equal 1? Okay, and now we can just start adding more quantifiers. So now we can define, say, like the second level of the polynomial hierarchy. As saying, okay, does there exist an x such that for all y, like f of x y equals 1? Okay, we can do a similar thing for this, right? Like for all x, does there exist some y such that f of x y equals 1? And then we can just keep going, right? So we can say like, does there exist some x, like such that for y, there exists some z, and so on. And each time you add a quantifier, and they always alternate, every time you add a quantifier, you get like the next level in the polynomial hierarchy. So you get like this infinite kind of series of complexity classes, right? And that's what we call the polynomial hierarchy. All right, so one important thing to mention about that is, so there's this kind of notion of polynomial hierarchy collapse. So if one level of the polynomial hierarchy is in the one below it, then you get this kind of cascading effect where the entire polynomial hierarchy will collapse down to that level. So we think this is super unlikely to happen. It's kind of the same intuition that we don't think P is equal to NP, right? So we don't think that in polynomial time, so in P, you can answer an NP hard question. And likewise, in NP, we don't think you can answer like a question that's hard for the second level of polynomial hierarchy. Okay. So that will play a role in a second. Okay, so this was proved by Han et al. All right, and then there's this result of Scott Aronson from 2005, where he showed that post-BQP, so quantum computing with post-selection, is actually equal to this class PP. So this is like another classical computational class. Intuitively, it's a class where you can, say, carry out let's say, an exponential number of polynomial length computations in parallel. So the actual definition of the class is it's like BPP, so you need to answer some question, yes or no, but you only need to be right with probability greater than a half. Right? It can be very, very close to a half, it just has to be bigger than a half. Okay, so the set of problems that are contained in PP is like pretty big. And then, yeah, so Scott showed that post-BQP is actually the same as PP, which is a bit surprising. Then finally, there's this kind of super important result of Toda from 1991. He showed that any problem in the polynomial hierarchy can be reduced to solving some polynomial number of problems that are contained in PP. Okay, so in complexity notation, this just means that the polynomial hierarchy is contained in P to the PP, right? Which means you have some PP machine that you can call some polynomial number of times. Okay, so this matters because Scott showed that PP is equal to post-BQP, so P to the PP is equal to P to the post-BQP. And therefore, like if post-BQP is equal to post-BPP, so if adding post-selection makes the two classes equal, makes quantum and classical computing equal, then we'd get this cascading effect like all the way down to the third level of the polynomial hierarchy. And as I said, like we think that's really unlikely to happen. Okay, so this is like fairly strong evidence that quantum computing with post-selection is like much more powerful than classical computing with post-selection. So this this argument that I just went through about polynomial hierarchy collapse actually forms the basis of many of these like quantum computational supremacy results that have become quite popular. So the argument kind of roughly goes like this. It says if BPP equals BQP, then adding post-selection shouldn't change anything. So post-BPP should equal post-BQP. But one kind of strange effect is if we take these non-universal quantum computational models, so things like boson sampling or the one clean qubit model or IQP circuits, when we add post-selection to them, you end up with post-BQP. Okay, so it makes them universal. So then we can say, right, if you could classically simulate these like non-universal models that are kind of easier to implement in the lab, if you could simulate them efficiently classically, then post-BPP would equal post-BQP, and we get this polynomial hierarchy collapse, okay, which we think is super unlikely. Okay, so this at least the early results in this area of quantum supremacy just argued that using post-selection, we can kind of argue that things like boson sampling cannot be simulated classically efficiently. Okay, so that's kind of it for motivation. So I'm going to explain like the next part of the title, which was query complexity. So in this model, we're only going to count the number of queries we need to make to the input to compute some function, and not like the entire computational time. Okay, so where do we do this? Well, in query complexity, we can actually prove some things. All right, so in normal computational complexity, we have things like I just showed you with the polynomial hierarchy, where we go, we don't think this class is equal to this class, because if it were, then something else would be true. Then like the polynomial hierarchy would collapse, and we don't think that's true. Therefore, we don't think the original thing is true. Right? But nothing is actually proved. We can just prove these like implications. But when we turn to this query complexity setting, we can actually prove things kind of unambiguously and rigorously. So for instance, like in the query model, we can actually prove separations between the power of quantum and classical computation. So a good example is like unstructured search. So this is a problem that Grover's algorithm solves. Okay, so given like n items and one of them is like marked in some way, you need to find the marked one without having any order on the input. So we know we can prove that classically you need to query the input like n times. But quantumly, using Grover's algorithm, we only need square root n queries. And in fact, you can prove this is optimal. Okay, so using these kind of query complexity methods, we can actually prove like rigorous, unambiguous separations between like models of computation. Great, so now I can explain what the title means. So I looked at the basically query analog of post-BPP. So classical computation, but with post-selection. And then I looked at like the query complexity of this. Okay, so I'm gonna call the query complexity kind of class or measure post-R. Okay, so the R comes from the fact that the query complexity of randomized classical computing is just called R, right? So it's a post-selected version of this. So to kind of give a motivating example, if we want to compute the OR of some input x using a post-selected classical query algorithm, we can do the following thing. So we can pick some random index between 0 and n minus 1. We'll query that element of the input, so we make one query to xi. If it is 1, then we return 1, right? Because we know the OR of this input must be 1. If it's 0, we still don't know, but we've gained a little bit of information. And so with a very small probability, we'll return 0, so 1 over 2n. In all other cases, we just return don't know. Okay. So in some sense, our algorithm has like three outputs. It's like yes, no, or don't know. And then we have this post-selection step at the end where we're going to post-select on not seeing the outcome don't know. Okay, and if you kind of work through the maths, which is pretty straightforward, you'll find that this does actually kind of give you the right answer with probability greater than 2/3. So the post-selected classical query complexity of computing the OR function is just 1. Right? And this is analogous to the three-set example I showed earlier. So what's kind of interesting is, I'll just go back to that, like just using the OR function, which is a super simple function, we can already show that post-selected classical computation is like much, much more powerful than, say, quantum computation or these various other complexity measures. And I'll come back to that in a bit. Okay, so before I talk about the results, I have to just define a couple things. So we have this notion of polynomial approximation. So this comes up all the time in query complexity. And basically, it's a method to lower bound query complexities. So what we do is we care about these n-variate multilinear polynomials. So they're just, they take in like n Boolean values and they spit out some real number, usually bounded between 0 and 1. So this polynomial has a following form. So it's a sum over all possible subsets of the n input bits. And then for each subset, we take the product over their values. Okay, so if any one of them is 0, then this thing will be 0. Then we assign some coefficient alpha s to each monomial, which is what we call these. Okay, so these are the things we're going to be dealing with. And we say that some polynomial p, epsilon approximates the function f. If for every x in the domain that you care about, it's kind of within epsilon of the right answer. Okay, and then the degree of a polynomial is just the size of its largest monomial to which we assign a non-zero coefficient alpha s. Okay, and then finally, we have this notion of the epsilon approximate degree of a function. This is just the smallest degree that the polynomial has to have to be able to epsilon approximate f in this sense. Okay, and then like just to motivate like why we care about this, we can show that the acceptance probability of some quantum query algorithm that makes t queries to the input can be written as a degree 2t polynomial. Okay, so what I mean is, let's say you have some quantum query algorithm that makes t queries to the input. Once it's done this, you can write its state as a superposition over all computational basis states, where the coefficient on each string z is a polynomial of degree t. Okay, so it's not super obvious. And if you want, I can go through like the proof of this, but like if you want me to. Okay, so what this means is the probability that this algorithm will accept, so the probability that like say the first bit is one, is like the square of these coefficients that you care about. And so the actual acceptance probability can be written as a degree 2t polynomial. So the reason this is useful is if you want to prove a lower bound on the quantum query complexity of computing some function, because you can write down the probability acceptance of this quantum algorithm as a degree 2t polynomial, this means that the degree of the function is actually a lower bound for the quantum query complexity of the function. So this is the so-called polynomial method. And it's been used to show a whole bunch of quantum lower bounds on things like computing the AND of a bit string, or like majority, or like solving the collision problem or something. So if I go back, it was, so we have the epsilon approximate degree. So you want to approximate this function up to error like a third. Right, so when we write Q, it's like I want a quantum query algorithm that compute F up to error a third. And this is lower bound by the like third degree of F. So what I'm going to focus on in this talk are rational functions or rational polynomials. So this is the ratio of two polynomials. So R is our rational function. It's just one polynomial divided by another. And we have the same notion of like epsilon approximation. So R approximates F if it's close to the value of F for every input x. The degree of R is just like the maximum of the degrees of P and Q. And then we use this notation like the rational degree of F, which is like the minimum degree a rational function has to have to epsilon approximate F. Okay, so there's this this previous result of Amila Mahadev and Ronald Dorff, where they showed that the post-selected quantum query complexity, so the quantum version of what I'm studying, is completely characterized by the degrees of rational functions. So what I mean is that the post-selected quantum query complexity of computing some function f is basically equal up to this factor of a half to the rational degree of this function. All right, so in some sense, it means that post-selected quantum query algorithms and rational functions are like the same thing. You can always get from one to the other just with this constant factor. So in particular, it means you can lower bound the post-selected quantum query complexity of computing a function f by finding a lower bound on rational degrees. And likewise, you can find an upper bound. OK, so now I can kind of move on to my results. I have to define like one last thing, which is the non-negative rational degree. So this is the same as a rational degree that I talked about in the last slide, except the coefficients in these rational functions are only allowed to be positive, right? They can't be negative. And because of this, we have to slightly change the domain of this these polynomials. So now the polynomials are over the variables, the normal input variables and their negations. Okay, and we call these things like literals. Okay, so basically find the analogous result to the quantum case in that the post-selected classical query complexity is characterized by the non-negative rational degree. Okay, so again, like you can say the same thing, that post-selected classical query algorithms are really just rational functions where you're restricting the coefficients to be non-negative. And then interestingly, like if you don't allow your query algorithm to make a mistake, so it has to be zero error, you'd lose a whole bunch of power, and it ends up being equivalent to non-deterministic query algorithms, or like certificate complexity, just in case anyone is interested in that. So where do we get rational functions? The answer is like Bayes' theorem, right? So this is Bayes' theorem. We might say that like A is like the event that you get the right answer. B is the event that you don't see, don't know, is like the output of your query algorithm. Obviously, like if you do get the right answer, then you didn't see, don't know. So this thing is always equal to one. And so we end up with like the probability of getting the right answer given this post-selection step is just like the probability of getting the right answer divided by the probability of the post-selection step succeeding. Okay, so that's the intuitionist way we get rational functions and not just normal polynomials. And then one thing I want to point out is the difference between quantum and classical. So in this result of Mahadev and DeWolf, they have essentially come up with some quantum query algorithm that can approximate rational functions. And the coefficients in these rational functions correspond in some way to amplitudes in the quantum query algorithm and vice versa. Whereas in my result, the coefficients in these kind of non-negative rational functions correspond to probabilities in the classical query algorithm. So in some sense, like the only difference is the fact that in the quantum case, you're allowed negative coefficients and amplitudes can be negative. And in the classical case, like they have to be positive. So I guess in some sense, like we can say that the only difference between quantum and classical computing, like at least in the kind of post-selected query model, is just in the use of probabilities versus amplitudes. And the fact that you use amplitudes gives you a bit more power. Okay, so I mentioned that the OR function gives you some kind of easy separations. So as I said, like the post-selected classical query complexity of computing the OR function is just one. So it's immediately better than quantum because the quantum query complexity of computing the OR function is like root n. The exact, so if you're not allowed to make errors, like the post-selected classical query complexity computing OR is just n. So it's if you're not allowed to make errors, like you lose like a huge amount of computational power. And then, like, just in case people know, anyone knows what QMA is. So we have the like quantum certificate complexity, which is like the query analog of this class QMA. And that as well has like the quantum certificate complexity of the OR function is root n. And so post-selected classical query complexity is kind of much more powerful. So in some sense, I think this kind of suggests that maybe post-BPP is maybe a bit more powerful than QMA, but we don't know this. So just to show you what the kind of degree one rational polynomial really looks like for approximating the OR function, it's this, right? So you just sum over all your input variables and divide by all your input variables, the sum over all your input variables, and you just add some tiny epsilon. And then you can check that if the OR of x is 1, then this thing will be like very close to 1, and if it's 0, then it will be equal to 0. Okay. So the OR function gives us a few separations, but the kind of the quantum and the classical post-selected query complexity of computing OR are both one. So what I really wanted to do is show some separation between the power of quantum computing and classical computing with post-selection. So for this, we looked at the majority function. So this is just given n bits, if more than half of them are one, then the answer is one, otherwise it's zero, right? So I showed that there's no low-degree rational approximation to the majority function if it's only allowed non-negative coefficients, right? So in other words, the R-deg plus of the majority function is like n. And because of this characterization that the post-selected classical query complexity is lower bounded by the non-negative rational degree, this implies that there is no efficient post-selected classical query algorithm for computing majority function, right? So in other words, post R of the majority function is also n. But in this paper by Mahadev and DeWolf, they actually showed that the post-selected query complexity of computing the majority function is at most like log n. Okay, so what this implies is some big like exponential separation between the quantum query complexity and the classical query complexity of computing the majority function when you're given post-selection.
So this is a total function, right?
This is a total function. There's no promises. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
This is quite different. Then.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm actually going to mention that. So yeah, like I said earlier, like post-selection really amplifies this difference between quantum and classical computing. And kind of a thing that makes this obvious is, right, for total functions without post-selection, We know that the quantum query complexity and the classical kind of randomized query complexity are polynomially related, right? You can't get an exponential separation. And in fact, the largest separation that's actually known is like this separation of like q to the 2.5, right? So it's just a bit bigger than quadratic. Whereas on the other hand, like we've shown that if you do add post-selection, you can really exaggerate this difference. And now like the quantum query complexity and the classical query complexity are not polynomially related. And so the biggest separation is like the one that I just showed you, which is for the majority function. Okay, so there are a couple extra results that are not super important, but might be interesting. So this lower bound on the majority function can be generalized to all symmetric Boolean functions, and you get like an analogous kind of lower bound. And there's this kind of semi-famous result of Peturi in like approximation theory that basically has the same result, but not for like rational functions. And then finally, like all these lower bounds carry over to the communication complexity setting. So any lower bound you can prove in this setting, you carries over to this complex communication complexity setting. Great. So I think I can wrap up. So like the takeaway here is really that when we add post-selection, like it exaggerates the difference between classical and quantum computing, but it also kind of makes it easier to characterize. So when we add post-selection, we can characterize the classical query complexity, and we can also characterize the quantum query complexity up to these constant factors. And therefore, like it lets us directly compare the quantum and classical cases, right? So we got this exponential separation for the majority function. And we saw that, like intuitively, the reason is that quantumly we can use amplitudes. Classically, we're restricted to probabilities, and this really like limits the amount of power that we have available to us. Yep, and then finally, like this fact that post-selection really kind of teases the two models apart in some sense. All right, so I'll wrap up there, I think, and take questions.
So when you said that this carries over to the communication complexity setting,
mm-hmm.
you mean the regular communication complexity, or is there...
with post-selection, right? So
what does that mean exactly?
Right. Let's see. Right, I guess you can define something analogous to this setting. So you have, like, say, two parties, and they want to compute some function, so they either output 1, 0, or, like, don't know, right? And you can just have some global post-selector that post-selects on like not see and don't know. So, yeah.
Okay, I mean, I guess this is a detail, but do both, I mean, so it's if one party outputs don't know, then you can still post-select, or?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Probably, I mean, I'd have to look at the definition. So, I mean, this paper, like, where is it? Yeah, like this paper basically looks at post-selected classical query complexity. Yeah, I don't remember the exact definition actually, so I'm not sure.
I'm guessing it's just on one side. Because the communication complexity only care about one party. One of the parties, usually this inner model.
I guess so.
Because
there's all these different communication complexity models. Right?
Yeah. But usually whenever they introduce it, they just Bob needs to learn that function.
Yeah.
And then he tells Alice. So I would guess you're just post-selecting.
Right.
Right. Although you probably wouldn't gain too much power if they're both post-selected.
Well, I guess it's just one bit different. So that's the idea. In the case where they can have any number of rounds. So.
Yeah. The quantum supremacy sliding has some kind of implications that. If some complexity classes are equal, then some post-selected complexity classes were also equal. But that was not query complexity, right?
That was not query complexity.
So
yeah.
Can you make some inferences from like query complexity classes?
I see. I mean, right. So you'd have to define like a query analog of the polynomial hierarchy. Do you mean like this exact argument or just in general?
Exactly, but I'm wondering like, can you use this this separation somehow like can reverse the implication and like something like for like non-post-selective complexity.
Sure. Not really. I mean, yeah, so like lower bounds in query complexity don't necessarily imply lower bounds in computational complexity. Because you might argue that like, oh, there's actually a better way to compute this than just like querying the input or something. So in some cases it seems obvious, but yeah, right. I don't know if anyone thinks that, that kind of these results in query complexity really prove anything in computational complexity.
Do you think this is optimal, this exponential separation?
Like
in total functions,
yeah, sure.
Polynomially related.
Yep.
I'm guessing the post-selective rule, the most you, they're
mm-hmm.
exponentially.
Right, exactly.
Related.
So for partial functions, I reckon you could probably get a bigger separation.
Maybe doubly exponential.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe even unbounded, I don't know.
Because if you have an exponential size classical computer, then you mm-hmm. can simulate quantum.
Right.
So I was wondering, usually you can bound the power of quantum between classical and exponentially
mm-hmm.
classical.
Mm-hmm.
Very roughly. So I was, you could probably.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well,
I'm guessing. I'm guessing, have you thought about whether this is optimal?
Not really. I mean, it's optimal for, maybe it's not even optimal for total functions. It's optimal for symmetric total functions.
Yeah.
I imagine for total functions it's optimal, but for partial, I think you could probably do better. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. Yeah.
Maybe you could take one that is very large separation already.
Right. Maybe something with like cheat sheets or something. I don't really want to go down that road, but yeah.
Are these still linear programs? These rational polynomials?
Yeah.
I think they are.
So like, yeah, the lower bound I first proved using like linear programming, and then realized it was a much more straightforward approach. I think they probably are. But I didn't think about it that much.
I was wondering if you can use this post-selected one to give upper bounds on randomized query complexity. On regular randomized. Maybe it's too powerful, but. Because you have polynomial method gives a lower bound,
mm-hmm.
but it's not known to be tight, and
yep.
we don't know how to make it tight. So I'm wondering if this linear program could be used to show a corresponding upper bound. But I'm guessing that's far too strong. But
That would be fun to look at, though. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thank you.